and welcome to another Monday morning Book of Mormon class with Kevin Hinckley. Recorded live, we dive deeply and deliberately into this inspired scripture. How far we get in one class depends a lot on the material and the doctrines left for us by ancient prophets. A single chapter may occupy one class or many. Of course, opinions expressed by the teacher or the class members do not constitute official church doctrines. Join us in this adventure and discover the hidden treasures found within his pages. And now, on to the class. Said. Well, let's go ahead and get rolling here. On a rainy day, we're hoping that the weather continues to cooperate so that we don't lose power or anything. Now, by the way, I found it interesting. I taught gospel doctrine yesterday, kind of at the last minute, and realized that I was talking about Kirtland Camp or Zion's Camp. He went on Kirtland Camp. This is my pioneer ancestor here. We're talking about Zion's Camp, and I realized that it had some real parallels to what we're talking about with plural marriage, and that both lessons kind of showed up at the same time for me this week. So here's my introductory question. Okay, can the Lord rescind a previous revelation? And why, if he knew he would?
We didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, because, and again, he's going to state a revelation, but at some point, he will then rescind the one that he did previously. Okay, so I'm going to make sure that you're obedient. So I'm going to give you a commandment that I know I'm going to rescind later, but I'm going to require you to live the first commandment until I rescind it with the second one. Yes.
I had to go back and get
all the time he's writing on it, he knows I'm going to go down here and this ain't going to work. But they're going to exercise their agency. Yeah. Oh, good. That's a good point. How many of you have had or known people with patriarchal blessings that they were given blessings in their patriarchal blessing that would never be accomplished or never were?
So, a lot of times when you give somebody a blessing, it's predicated upon your faith, their faith, to be the faith of others who are concerned for them and things like that. But a previous revelation, if you take revelation down to the personal level, then it's how I understood a parable. And I used to understand a parable one way, and now I understand it differently. And it's because I was ready to understand it one way.
At one level?
At one level of imperfection. And now I'm ready to understand it, hopefully at a less imperfect level.
I think that one often happens.
So, I mean, a lot depends on what you're calling a revelation, whether it's doctrine or commandment or...
Yeah, I think that's true. But one of the things I find both with Zion's Camp or the Camp of Israel and plural marriage, we're talking about codified, preached from the pulpit, lived experience that we then go, nope. We suddenly then go, here comes the additional revelation that rescinds everything we have believed, known, and been living.
and the whiplash that comes from what? Or, I mean, one of my last callings, I was released by the prophet. You know, he stood up and said, "We're getting rid of high priest group leader." And I went, "Oh, okay." And now I'm not. Yeah.
Well, in the case of Zion's camp, though, I have a 17-year-old class, so I thought it was similar lesson yesterday. My understanding is that the governor of Missouri had committed
Governor Dunklin
that he would use the militia to restore the Mormons to their properties, and the purpose of the 200 or so souls were to maintain that once the militia had restored the properties.
It was.
And then he reneged on that.
Right. I mean, you can see why they did it in practicality. It's just that sometimes the question was, and some of the questions for the brethren on the trip was, God said he would do it, and because the governor, can the governor's actions rescind a revelation from God simply by their actions, or did God know that Dunklin wouldn't follow through, so why would he give them something that, and I think that's, but part of, I think, what they learned, and part of what I guess I was saying yesterday, was the fact that we do this every 4 years. You know, 4 years from now, we'll have this, that same Zion's camp lesson. And if we simply reduce it to what has been the gospel doctrine answer for that is, did Zion's camp fail? No. Brigham Young said the Lord got his leaders. Okay, let's do a closing prayer then. We're done. But there's so much more about understanding God and revelation and how revelation works and all the things that would impact that. Yeah.
So my aunt is a teacher. Says, I want to be a student. By the way, it's really raining. I want to give my student a rigorous curriculum and my student wants. And I thought, for me,
you want the recess thing?
24/7.
There is that conflict, isn't there? I think, did I mention this group that one of the ladies that came to my Education Week classes, she says, I was trying to decide what class to go to, and so I looked you up on AI. Kevin Hinckley, Education Week, and it said, he was listed as one of the most entertaining speakers at Education Week. And I was trying to decide if that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Lone was going to sleep.
So what you need to do is you need to tell ChatGPT all these good things about you just before Education Week. And it doesn't know who's telling it.
Well, that's true. It would. You think I could load ChatGPT before we start?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But going back to Revelation, I would just think that I'm not the only person here that ever got a revelation or an inspiration to go do something.
Yeah.
And then I went to do it and I found out.
And it totally blew up in your face.
I was there for a different reason.
Yes.
Than I thought.
Right.
And I was to accomplish a different thing than I thought.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have received the revelation about going to do the thing that I actually needed to do because I wasn't open to it.
Well, let me ask you something. As parents, because always when we're trying to say, would God do this or does God do this, I always ask people to approach it from, would a parent do that? And would a perfect parent do that? So let me ask you, as parents, did you ever let or allow your kids to do something that you knew they would fail at? Or did you step in always to make sure they never failed? Or are you like, you know they're going to do it, and you know it's not going to turn out, but they need to have the experience of following. And now, it's one step more if God says, I want you to do it, knowing you're going to fail at it. But still, there is that process of learning from failing. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, like, I teach the 15, 16-year-olds.
Yeah. And they know a lot more than you do.
They think so. Anyway.
Yes, they do.
is that we will have trials and tribulations in our lives, and that's when we grow. If everything is easy,
yeah,
and everything just goes like it should, then we don't grow.
Okay, so God may give me a revelation that He knows is going to bring me tribulation, because He wants to grow my patience. See the, yeah, I got it. See the questions that are there?
Well, just to change a little bit here. For instance, I taught gospel doctrine class. If we would keep talking about this plaque that Joseph Smith drew up of what Zion's town should look like.
Yeah.
20,000 people with 12 temples in the middle of what?
Or at least Oliver Cowdery did.
It never will happen.
That's right.
Now, why would you give a revelation?
Yeah, well, and we know that then it was actually changed dramatically once they got to Nauvoo. So again, you're still saying, well, part of what I think happened, and they may be putting a button on yesterday's lesson, is the fact that they were told at the end, you're going to go through this experience, but you still don't know me. So I'm going to give you an endowment in the Kirtland Temple that will allow you to get to know me better and how my revelations work and how revelation does work. Okay, but that doesn't mean that in the process of growing and learning that we don't struggle to get additional understandings about what's going on. Yeah.
The answer to your question is the Lord does it to see if we're willing to do it.
Sometimes.
I mean, will He go do it? Okay, you did it. You've done enough.
Yeah, and certainly that happened. Yeah, Dee? Oh, yeah, we won't get into priesthood blessings.
You know, I'll pray about that individual, and I'll have thoughts about what needs to be in that blessing. I realize that can always change, but I'll have all these wonderful thoughts about the blessing that they're going to receive. And I get there, and I realize I'm not ready to receive it.
Yeah. See, I have wondered sometimes if prophets were, because they're human, sometimes those revelations might have had some prophetness mixed into the revelations, what they really wanted to have happen, and that might have played a role. That makes sense?
Just to follow up a little bit on that, first couple times that happened, what's going on? You know, why did I have all this revelatory stuff in my head and then not deliver it?
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. But you're still learning through that process. Yeah. Yeah, Abraham's one of those interesting. It is a Hubie Brown quote. Abraham had to learn something about Abraham.
And she said, you know what, I wanted this. And I thought, you know, we have righteous desires. And so the desire is correct. And I felt now, I think that agency is correct. But it's just interesting in these moments.
Yeah.
Our desire is correct. That's not the agency.
Especially when it's a righteous desire. We just don't know how it's going to be fulfilled. Yeah. That's a great question. That's a great comment. Sometimes they don't know that there was a previous experience. Ah, okay. Well, let's take this then.
What about the blessing that Isaac gave to Jacob? Thought he was giving it to Esau.
Yeah. Yes. Wouldn't God have known better than that?
God knew.
Yeah.
Jacob didn't know.
That's right.
I think sometimes, Isaac didn't know. I think sometimes we're Isaac. Sometimes we try to control the blessing.
Boy, is that the truth. Okay. Yeah.
I think
Well, and that's why I say that the scripture should challenge us. That's why I struggle a little bit sometimes having the gospel doctrine answer, where what we really need to do is all get to that same answer. We all walk out, well, God got his leaders on Zion's camp. Therefore, we know everything we need to know about that event, which, by the way, if that's the case, then nothing about Zion's camp means anything to me. I have nothing to learn from it, because if I'm not going to be one of Joseph Smith's leaders, it has nothing for me.
So what about people who get married and they have a rough patch, but they had an inspiration that they were supposed to marry that person?
Yeah. Well, I know that's where the struggle lies. Hang with this, guys, because this is right where we're going. Okay? Because I've thought about our history of plural marriage, and if you think about it, think about how the church and our whole experience in the world and everything would have been so different without plural marriage. Ever thought about that? What if there was no plural marriage? Man, our mission process would be a much different thing. You know, if we had, think about from a mission standpoint, if we had no word of wisdom and no history of plural marriage. Hey, we're rocking at that point, aren't we? But that's not going to be how it works. But what we got was this history of plural marriage. So let's walk through this just a little bit here. Okay, just a reminder. What did Nauvoo plural marriage look like? Very small, very quiet. Did Joseph Smith ever stand up and say, we believe in plural marriage? No, in fact, did he ever stand up and say, we don't believe in plural marriage? Yes, he did. Number of times. Yes, he did. Very clear. We don't practice polygamy. Period. Done. But okay. Nope. Is there?
It was what section 100 proclaimed monogamy.
Or was it 101? Okay, so it's there. Now, in his mind, was he lying, or was he protecting the church? Or did he believe that the marriages that he was performing wouldn't necessarily be under the way that the world would look at polygamy? But I think he always had in the back of his mind Far West and the attack and fall of Far West. So for the most part, you know, plural marriage was very secret, very quiet, and
that's the way it is today too. If you have two wives, you don't let them know about each other.
You're right. Some things don't change. Yeah.
I just said it was just the leaders, it was a very small group.
Very small group, yep. Okay, so that's why it's interesting. So then they're going to and then, of course, that's part of what happens with the Nauvoo expositor, is going to say, yes, they're practicing spiritual wivery, and that's one of the charges. And, of course, you know, Joseph was right. If they knew about it, it would get a whole lot worse.
What is spiritual wivery?
More than one word.
Non-sanctioned plural marriage.
Yeah, and it worked for John C. Bennett as he's busy, you know, having trysts with women. We're just spiritual wives. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so they leave. They're going to leave Nauvoo. And then what's going to happen here is that in 1852, and I'll read part of that in a second, 1852, Orson Pratt, which it's so ironic that they had Orson Pratt read that. And again, I'll tell you that in a second. But Orson Pratt is going to announce in 1852 from Salt Lake, yeah, we are. It's part of our tradition. It's part of what we're doing. Whoop. Okay. Then it expands. Retrenchment in 1857, especially with knowing that Johnson's army was coming, they're going out there. Home teachers are going and giving almost like the Temple Recommend interviews to the people. We're trying to stir stuff up. We're getting, you know, the dances are going away. We're just hardcore. We swing hard into a rigidness. And so one researcher has done some work in Manti, where my other ancestor on my mom's side ended up in Manti. And at the height of this, about 1857, as a result of this retrenchment and stirring stuff up, about 43% of Manti was now living polygamy, about half. Okay?
When it started in 1856 with Grant and Kimball, it's called the Reformation. Is that the same thing?
Yeah, it is. Because the Reformation comes, and then the retrenchment is kind of the application of what they're trying to do. To go into every home, stir everything up, and again, they know the army's coming. And anything else happened during like 1857, by the way? Mountain Meadows. Yes, is exactly. By a decade later, after 1857, Manti's plural marriage is down to about 1 in 3. Another decade, it's 1 in 4. And then by the turn of the century, it was 1 in 10. So you get this spike of plural marriage, because if I'm going to prove that I am a good Mormon, what do I need to do? Add a wife. If I hadn't been living it, I need to add a wife, and then I need to add another wife, and then that's how I'm going to prove I'm... It's kind of that saint mentality that we get into is, I'm in a room of good people. How do I prove I'm more good than you? Well, if you've got two wives, I need three. You know, I've got to prove somehow that we do that. But retrenchment blows up that, and it's coming just a few years after the actual announcement.
Those ratios in Manti that you talked about, that would just kind of indicate maybe that after 1860, there were no new marriages.
It was still happening. It just wasn't as...
It would have been way less than 1 in 3 or 1 in 4.
Yeah, it was.
In order for that total ratio to drop like that.
Well, and there's some reasons for that. So hey, it all kind of comes together. Because 1856, we now get the first Republican election platform, and they are going after the twin relics of barbarism, which, as we talked last time, was...
Slavery
and polygamy. Yeah, because if you're really going to stir people up, you got to be against something. Got to be you got to build up a fervor so you'll vote with me because I'm going to be against something. So the 1856 election platform goes after that. Then we're going to get, I'm jumping way ahead because we'll talk about some of this. And this is going to lead all the way up to Edmunds Tucker Act, which is going to disenfranchise the church, kind of discouraging new marriages because these things are happening. Then we get, but they hold on to it until finally we get the 1890 Supreme Court decision. They took it all the way to the Supreme Court, the validity of whether these things were true, and it gets, and they enshrine Edmunds Tucker. If you're going to live plural marriage, these things are going to happen. And then based on that, and even know that it's coming, that's when we get the manifesto in 1890 that will then be read by Orson F. Whitney in conference. Okay. All right. Those are the bullet points. Let me get into the weeds a little bit here. So Orson Pratt. Now, to have Orson Pratt, anybody remember from your history how Orson Pratt was introduced to plural marriage? Yes.
Daughter.
Yes. Well, wife. Remember, back then, and it's one of those things that's misunderstood. Again, if you're one of my leaders and I love you dearly, how do I? But I'm not going to be really sealed to you. But the fastest way, because I haven't really developed the temple theology completely yet, the best way to do it would be sealed to your wife. So I'm going to approach her and say, I love your husband. So I'm going to be sealed to you. I'm going to adopt you as a wife. Be sealed to you as a wife. And in that way, I save you and your husband. Now, back then, that's a little hard to understand. To say that Sister Pratt took it poorly, as did Sidney Rigdon's wife, is an understatement. Because
I understand.
Yes. Right. that would be hard to, that's a, especially back then, it's like, that makes no sense. Okay. And I don't think he'd understand either if I'm saying, I love the heck out of him, will you marry me? Just doesn't make sense, right?
Well, it's a huge difference whether or not there's any consummation.
Well, and that aside, we're not even getting to that part. We're just saying this is how this, because we only understand one thing about marriage, is that this is what it may lead to, right?
But it's easy for me to imagine a sealing ordinance where a community is all sealed to one another. And that's okay, but when they all start consummating.
That's true, then it's a problem. But you're also looking from a present eyes looking.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, yes?
Okay.
Yes.
Orson.
Okay. When he'll read the manifesto. This is 1852. This is Orson Pratt announcing to the world we're living polygamy. But that's why this is interesting, because for Orson Pratt, then he comes back from his mission. She says, Joseph's trying to marry me. And he's been in England. He's been doing all these amazing things. He gets despondent. He gets suicidal. They find a suicide note in the road in Nauvoo. They go looking for Orson Pratt. He's sitting on an island in the Mississippi, suicidal, and they got to go get him and bring him back and bring him to Joseph. And it takes about 4 days to turn his head around because he was so blown away by this. Now, what makes that fascinating is that during this period of time, Orson Pratt will be the most articulate, vocal explainer of why we're living plural marriage. He will have a major public debate with one of the great priests from back east who comes to the tabernacle, and Orson Pratt will be the voice of the church explaining why plural marriage is a deal. Yeah.
You know, I know that Orson Pratt and Harley Pratt had a big schism at some point that they had to repair later in their lives. Is it related to that?
No. In fact, I've got a picture of Parley coming up. Yeah. In prison, you'll like that.
So, in an 1852 model of plural marriage,
yeah,
was one husband, like say for Joseph, would he be married to other people's wives in 1852?
No, by 1852, remember they've worked out the temple sealing endowment.
This is a nuclear family here.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, this is not the Nauvoo version. This is after Wilford and Brigham have worked out the new endowment. Okay, so I know there's a lot here, but hang with me. So 1852, Brigham says, tell him. So he gets up in conference. And for the first time, it's quite unexpected to me, brothers and sisters, to be called upon to address this forenoon. And they never knew. They're like, you're going to get called to speak in conference. You didn't even know until just a few minutes before your job is to speak. And still more to address upon the principle that has been named, namely a plurality of wives. It is rather new ground for me. That is, that I have not been in the habit of publicly speaking on the subject. But it's rather new ground to the inhabitants of the United States. Oh, yeah. And not only to them, but to a portion of the inhabitants of Europe. What portion of inhabitants of Europe are now hearing about plural marriage? And the members, people joining the church in Europe that did not yet know about plural marriage. Yeah, you got it. I heard an audible sigh. Yes, that was a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, I've read that missionaries would go to Europe.
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
Wow.
Yes, that's why by 1852, and people are coming, it's like, yeah, we need to finally announce this. We feel like we've got, this is, you know, we're finally in the valley, and it looks like we're okay. A portion of them have not been in the habit of preaching a doctrine of this description. Consequently, we shall have to break up new ground. Yes. It is well known, however, to the congregation before me that the Latter-day Saints have embraced a doctrine of plurality of wives as part of the religious faith. It is not, as many have supposed, a doctrine. Now, But let me go right to the heart of what you just said. It is not, as many have supposed, a doctrine embraced by them to gratify the carnal lust and the feeling of man. It's not so we have more sex. We're not doing that. It's not, that's not the object of the doctrine. Now, decades down the road, did some of that may have entered into the... Like I say, sometimes these kind of things, when you put them in practice to kind of flawed mortal people, yes, I'm going to go off on a mission and come back with two new wives. We shall endeavor to set forth to this enlightened assembly some of the causes why the Almighty has revealed such a doctrine and why it is considered a part and portion of our religious faith. And I believe they will not, under the present... Now they, meaning the government, and boy was he wrong, I believe that they will not, under our present form of government, I mean the government of the United States, try us for treason for believing and practicing our religious notions and ideas. Ah, yeah, and so naive.
Well,
yes.
Maybe they didn't.
Yeah, it comes real close to it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the Constitution gives the privilege of the inhabitants of this country the free exercise, that it can be proven that it's a demonstration that we're living our faith, blah, 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 okay? And should there ever be laws enacted by this government to restrict them from free exercise of this part of their religion, such laws must be unconstitutional. So we're going to hang on to that until the 1890 Supreme Court decision that says, Nasson, this is not about living your religious freedom. It is a practice that is so abhorrent that we are going to exclude it and disenfranchise any organization that does.
The government, of course, laws against
it. Not much. Okay.
Isolated
yeah. Right, because that's where they went with it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so... mixed response to that. So I got this one. Missionary Richard Ballantyne writes to his wife from Madras, India. The great bone that is now being picked is polygamy. This is a large pill for many to swallow. And in fact, the very first sight of it nauseates their stomachs, that at present they can scarcely receive anything else. Imagine the surprise. I did have a conversation once on a day off in a post office with a lady on my mission in England. And she said, oh, you're American. Yeah, what are you doing here? I'm a Mormon missionary. Oh, no. And I says, yeah, I am. She says, I heard that Mormon missionaries used to grab young girls, they'd take them to Liverpool, and Mormons had built a tunnel called the Mersey Tunnel.
Take them to Salt Lake.
And do all unspeakable things in the temple. And I said, and how do we know about that? And she says, well, there was one girl that climbed to the top of the Salt Lake Temple, and she dove into the Great Salt Lake.
That's from the French model.
It is. And that's where she had got it and stuff like that. And I remember looking at her and saying, that's quite a leap. That's like a 20-mile jump. And she goes, really? And I says, and none of that's true. But that was one of those beliefs from those novels that just really ran with that. Okay? Yes. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, this is actually from Madras. Yeah, but if you're trying to, leave that and join Christianity, you're kind of trying to leave that.
The four wives thing is
possible. Yeah.
And when you see a guy in the grocery store with a wife and three daughters that are almost the age of the wife,
good chance. Okay, so all right, so but doesn't that give you a sense of what the reaction was going to be in the mission world? Especially if we've kept it quiet, and suddenly in 1852 and in England, by the way, you know, the shock for missionaries, and I think even for this guy, is going, he may have known about it, he might not have known about it. But now suddenly we're now living it. And this is this size of a seismic shift is just massive. Okay. Now, so what is the reaction? Where do we get the pushback? This is where it gets kind of fun. Because especially in 1856, when they're trying to figure out who they want to target, and of course the Mormons have always been a little weird anyway. What do we do with these guys? I think this is Edmonds. So great is the necessity of some decisive legislation, if there are any who would hesitate, I would say to them, as did Jefferson, at the time Louisiana was acquired, that they should throw themselves on their country, casting behind them, the language is always fun, casting behind them the metaphysical subtitles, risking themselves, or subtleties, and risking themselves like faithful servants. Really fancy way of saying, let's take a look at this and not try and use semantics to display what's going on. We know what's going on. There is no purpose to interfere with the most absolute freedom of religion. We're not trying to do that, nor to intermeddle with the rights of conscience. But the sole design of this bill is to punish gross offenses, whether in secular or ecclesiastical garb. Yeah, yes, they were living slavehood. Yeah, well, and these guys, this guy was from Maine. So he's an abolitionist.
So did the Edmund Tucker Act address just polygamy?
Edmund Tucker was just slavery, or just polygamy. Because we want to prevent practices which outrage the moral sense of the civilized world, to reach even those who steal the library of the court of heaven to serve the devil in. Yeah, there weren't that many, but part of what happened here by 1856, though, it's a territory. So this is happening inside one of our territories, and we're already hearing stuff coming, abuses of Brigham Young and all that. Remember, this is 1856. About what time does Johnson's army start heading for Utah? Yeah, this is all in the middle. So it's being stirred up as reports are coming back from judges serving in Utah territory of all the stuff that's going on with Brigham Young. And now this is just gas on flame. It is, right. Yeah, it is, and now remember, Mormonism was always seen as like right next to Mohammedism. You know, it would seem like there are weird things going on, and it's Mormons and Islam and all these weird people, and this is, and so anyway, if white girls are going to get pulled into this thing, then it's going to be just like Africa and the third world countries and stuff like that. And so there was that sense of, we have to protect good women across the country from this stuff. Yeah.
Well, this is a quote from a speech in Congress.
Yeah.
I think you could probably take almost any day in Congress today and listen to the inaccuracies that are stated.
Don't get me going on Charlie Kirk.
It's reinforcement to me that Congress has never worked very well.
No, and remember back then, part of what they were so good at was rhetoric and oratory, and the great people of the time were those that could rhetorically move people, but that means you got to appeal to emotions, and that's why I love this last line, to reach those who steal the library of the court of heaven to serve the devil in. Anybody know where that's from? That's Shakespeare.
And at the same time, that they're
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I'll say. You got it. It's dripping with irony, but.
What would be their opinion on mail order
brides? Yeah.
And if you get a mail order bride, she has.
If he's a good Christian man, it's probably okay.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. So what's Brigham Young's response to all of this? Brigham, who's not so bad with his own oratory, he's gonna respond. Polygamy, they are unconstitutionally striving to prevent. When they will accomplish their object, is it not for me to say, how will they get rid of this awful evil in Utah? How are they going to do that? They will have to expend about $300 million for building a prison, for we must all go to prison. Well, that wasn't far off. Yeah, as we'll see that. For we must all go to prison. Okay? And then this imagery. And after they have expended that amount for a prison and roofed it over the summit of the Rocky Mountains to the summit of the Sierra Nevada. So they're going to have to build this roof from the top of the Rockies all the way to Nevada. To the summit of the Sierra Nevada, we will dig out and go preaching through the world. So even after they roof over the Salt Lake Valley, we'll find a way out of that and we'll go on preaching. Okay, I just think that's awesome. Okay, all right. So that said, so it's gonna. This is gonna kind of come together in Edmunds Tucker, and I want you to see kind of what was behind the problems with Edmund Tucker. And I put in here UC because that's how it was generally in court documents and everything. This was always referred to as UC because polygamy. In and of itself, it has a lot of religious ramifications that I believe that I have more than one wife. So we've got to have a legal term that really describes what's going on so we can actually legislate against it. That means we have to way of proving that it's actually happening. Okay? Other than I just assume, because a lot of plural marriage now in Utah is I consider I have another wife, but maybe we're living together, maybe we're not. But I can just religiously, it's not legally, we're just doing it. They need some legal way of nailing these guys down. This is called UC. Okay, that's what I'm about to tell you. So the way to describe how do we pull this off, we're going to come up with a name UC, which is unlawful cohabitation. It's one thing if you think she's a wife. It's another thing if she's living with you or that you are maintaining her household. We can prove that in court. We can't prove what you're thinking. I consider her a wife, but I can prove whether she lives in your house.
So if you maintain the household, even if you don't go visit, you're still...
And in fact, I looked for it because I found it earlier in my research, but I couldn't find it for today. I've got from Summit County, I've got Arza Hinckley's census records. And I've got him living in one house that they were up in Summit County working on a mine. And he's living in one house and his other wife is living in a house across the street. So he's got Temperance, his wife, living with him, but he misspells her name deliberately. Okay. And then he changes the other wife's name completely. But you can see they're on the same street. Okay. This is like 1860. Yeah. 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 And of course, Temperance was his sister, right? Okay. So here's Edmund Tucker. Okay. Here's where the problem lies. So now we get to 1882, and they've come up with law after law, and each one is a little bit more, it's not stopping it, so they bring in another one, and they bring in another one. Yeah, it is. It's a territory, but not yet a state, and it keeps applying for statehood. So that means that because it's a territory, we can supply the judges, we can supply But now look what they're going to do, even inside this territory. That's why this gets to be more egregious. It disincorporated the church, as well as the perpetual immigration fund. They confiscated the perpetual immigration fund. That's one of the reasons why when we get to, and we'll talk about it in the next class or two, when we get to 1900 and Lorenzo Snow is freaking out because how are we going to somehow survive the church? We're not getting tithing money. But Edmund Tucker had confiscated their money. We're poor because the government took, we had a big perpetual immigration fund to get saints from Europe. That's gone. We used to have savings. That's gone. And so now we're super poor by 1900, and tithing didn't really happen.
You know, things don't change. We're dealing with these same kind of issues today. For instance, we're talking about a compound of Muslims that want to build out
the Sharia law worries.
And we're saying, oh, well, we don't want Sharia law for us. So quick to the, we wouldn't say a young girl can only get an education in eighth grade. We feel that she has a right. We have an ethic, a societal ethic that's not in law necessarily, but a societal ethic where we feel obliged to provide. Not, we don't believe in euthanasia. We don't believe in sacrificing virgins. We don't believe in all sorts of things.
But there is a point at which the government or the people should rise up and get rid of this, push back against an evil, which is, by the way, that's what resulted in Joseph and Sidney being tarred and feathered in Hiram, Ohio. It's what happened at Far West. It's what I mean, there was always that sense of American justice. If we don't think the court should do it, if the courts don't do it, the people should rise up and do it. That's been the problem all along.
So I had looked up, Brigham Young died in August of
1870. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
Is it correct that Brigham Young wasn't?
No, Brigham Young wanted statehood. He did. But he also didn't want to have any of the things that the kingdom of Deseret was always going to be more important than what's happening here.
It did.
And it's actually going to have some effect because when he dies, John Taylor then has to go into hiding because now they're looking for polygamists. And he will actually die, anybody know where? Kaysville, Utah, right where I grew up. And he dies in hiding, and his widow will say he's the third martyr from Carthage because the government was tracking him down. But, yeah.
You only have one widow?
At least one.
Okay.
At least one. That's John Taylor. But he's going to move it forward. But really, it's Wilford Woodruff that is going to, he's going to do a couple of things. We talked last week about what Wilford Woodruff did with the sealing ceremony and the adoption in our temples. This was the other thing that he was working on. And watch where he goes with this. Yeah.
Well, I think we need to be realistic also in that the, I don't know whether it's the ethics or whatever, I mean, Brigham Young, in order to get territory, he had to declare that we were a slave state.
Yes,
slave.
He did.
So, I mean,
or at least in his mind, that needed to happen.
I mean,
there
was some variation according to what needed to be done in the principles that he espoused.
Let's just say that Brigham Young was a very to quote, remember when Abraham Lincoln is asked what to do about the Mormons, and he says they're like a big wet log in the middle of the field. You just learn to plow around it.
Yeah.
Okay. Brigham Young was a big wet log in the middle of the field. And there were a number of directions that I think sometimes they wanted to go. And Brigham Young was going to be Brigham Young. He's going to do this.
Well, I think those two scriptures in the Bible about making unto yourselves the friends of the mammon of unrighteousness.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to put up with the society you live in.
Well, but you're balancing, and this is going to be part of my point, is that, and at what point then does the revelation of the Lord stand, or do sometimes revelations have to be modified to meet the challenges of what you, of where you're trying to survive at? Okay, this is going to be one of them, okay? It prohibited immigration of Latter-day Saints from other countries to gather to Utah territory. So not only are we going to be disenfranchised, but we're also going to not allow other members to come.
To the wall.
Yes. To keep them out. Yeah. Okay. It required prospective voters, jurors, and public officials to take an oath that they did not believe in practice or polygamy. Hold on to this idea in a couple of weeks when we talk about the Smoot hearings. Where they're trying to get Senator Smoot into Congress, and this thing comes up in a really big way because Edmund Tucker, to a certain extent, is still in practice. Okay, it annulled territory laws that allowed children of plural wives to inherit property. We'll starve them out in the long run. Okay, now this is the amazing one. I think two things: it required civil marriages. It abrogated the common law spousal privilege for polygamists, meaning that plural wives would be required, contrary to the Constitution, would be required to testify against their husbands if subpoenaed. Yeah. Well, but as it turned out, Reed was never a polygamist. That was part of the struggle. But they were going after this, which is one of the ways. You know, if we're trying to figure out who's doing UC, who's doing unlawful cohabitation, who would know? Well, we can't find the husbands. They're sending them on missions and things, but we can find the wives. And not only that, who else can we find? Cindy and I were talking about this the other day. Who else did they send off, like, back east? And yes. Midwives know where the living bodies are not buried. They're there. Yes, because she knows too much. It's like going after Al Capone's accountant. Right? She would know. Now look at this though. 1870. It eliminated women's suffrage. Women's suffrage in the United States happens when? 1920? In 1870, women had the right to vote. Yeah, and they took it away. You know, I just think that's fascinating. Okay? Which, by the way, when suffrage comes, LDS women are kind of at the forefront of that, and they're pretty vocal. Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah. That's kind of what they were thinking, but remember back then. But suffrage, voting rights were always based on land ownership. I mean, we don't want to get into that. Who owns land should be the one that is then voting, and because only men could own land. So we're actually kind of breaking out of that. Well, that's still what, yeah, and they were still fighting that when suffrage came along. It should be landowners. So that's why slaves can't vote. That's why women can't vote. Okay. But in this case, we wiped out suffrage. It replaced local judges with federally appointed judges. We just don't trust any judges that might be polygamists. Okay. That's fun. Okay. It abolished the office of territorial superintendent of district schools. So where are we going to get them? We got to make sure that we catch it in the schools, right? So we can't have, back then, in a town, and we've mentioned this, if you're in Cedar City, or you're Tooele, or you are Heber City, or you're in St. George, who is the superintendent of schools?
The state president.
the state Sunday school president. Who's the mayor? The bishop. Who is the county commissioner? State president. Okay, it all, okay, it's just how it works, right? We can walk in, we can go down to Delta, and immediately all the government offices are all filled and everything runs.
So on your first bullet point, the assets that were taken from the church and the church's immigration fund company, were they used for public schools?
That's a good question. They might have been to re-educate people and tell these children of polygamists that they're wrong. Okay, that's basically what they're trying to do. It also allowed the federal government to confiscate church property valued at more than $50,000. This is 1882.
That's per building or per unit?
Per building, anything above 50,000. 1882, when Salt Lake Temple going to be completed? 1894. So it's close. And now we finally have St. George, we've got Manti, we've got Logan. And much of the comments we're going to read from Wilford Woodruff, he gave in Cache County at the Logan Temple. And he's basically saying, we're going to lose this temple because it's more than 50,000. And we're trying to finish the Salt Lake Temple. We're going to lose the Salt Lake Temple. Yes, maybe a small temple would have worked better at that point. Okay, so what's going to happen then is that under UC, you could be convicted of what was called 6 and 6. That means that if you're going to be convicted of UC, unlawful cohabitation, you're going to be in prison for 6 months and have to pay a $6,000 fine.
Wow.
6 and 6. Okay? Yeah, okay. So what happens here is that they then build this temple up on the bench. It doesn't exist anymore. But they build this prison, and they didn't have to necessarily build it from the Rocky Mountains over to Nevada. They just needed to build a smaller temple and put the leaders in it. What am I saying? Well, you know, it is funny. B.H. Robert will call this a bit of a temple. That's where I'm getting, because there were a number of things discussed, and they would meet together, and they had kind of some sacred experiences, those that were locked up in this prison. But yeah, it's a prison. Wait till you read the thing from Lorenzo Snow. It's awesome. This is Rudger Clausen right here. You remember the First Presidency? He was convicted of UC. So him and the guys are hanging out, and the secretary of the First Presidency comes to visit, so they make sure that they get a picture of these guys. Now, by the way, in the years after, like around the turn of the century, these guys will hold on to these clothes because these are badges of honor. And so every time you get a July 24th parade, oh yeah, they're going to be riding in cars in their prison garbs, because now we're like Paul, we're like Joseph Smith. We have gone to prison for our beliefs.
So was this a if you were convicted of it once, were you done, or could, if you went back?
Yes, you could. They get you again, and in some cases. Like with Lorenzo Snow, I think it was longer because they found two wives. So he got 2 6 and 6s. Yeah. So we can make them consecutive if we want to. Because again, the idea is that we're gonna chop the head off of this snake kind of thing. We're gonna lock these guys up. Okay? All right. So here's another one of these guys out in the courtyard. And here's our guy right here. That's Parley Pratt. Parley's right here. These are all like 1880, 1882. Okay. Anyway, like I say, they're proudly, and of course, cameramen are coming in. They're doing all this kind of stuff. Yeah, they're the ones over here laughing, I think. Yeah, maybe these are the guards. something like that. We don't. Yeah, I know. Isn't it great? Okay. So one of the great jewels that we have coming out of this little experience is Lorenzo Snow. And Lorenzo Snow is going to keep a journal. And some of his, and there are a couple of journal entries here that are just pure gold for this one. Cohabitating Lorenzo Snow. So February of 1887. Oh, it's a little bit later. Okay. Here, so he's going to tell you about his conditions. Okay. And so he's going to write, it's kind of an awkward poem, but I just think it just makes me laugh when I read it. "'Tis no doubt you will remember my neat, cozy sleeping chamber. Remember my bedroom where I used to sleep at home? My neat, cozy sleeping chamber. Yet my friends 'twill not displease somehow to know their hearts 'twill ease. I'm going to tell you about my bed in prison. Thus their fears entire disarm. How nice we're fixed by Uncle Sam. Though oft he fails to full comply with all our wishes, all our wants supplied." Okay? Let me tell you about my bed. "Yet we hold him in high disdain. The poor ingrate would complain. 2 feet, if not 2 inches more. My boudoir starts from building floor." I'm about 2 feet off the floor here. Okay? Then, "Just 4 feet wide, its length is 7, though much preferred if 8 by 11. I wish my bed was bigger. For floor, rough boards on scantling stayed, wire caught over this correctly laid." So he's saying we've got a wire caught, and then he's got this small little bed. He just wishes was bigger, but it's four feet by seven. Yeah, he was used to bigger. He was probably bigger than a twin, that's right. Then he's going to say, "Thick, heavy cloth our heads behind, divide 2 beds to 4 assigned. Below, at foot, board wide and strong, preserves our rights. None venture wrong." In other words, this is what my bed looks like, but guess what? There are a number of us in here, and just so that you know how big it is, he actually laid it out. So he's saying, here's the room, and these are the brethren that are in each one of those bedrooms. And I tried to scroll in on enough so you could actually read his writing about who was there. But for the, you know, he's got like, there are two, and I don't know if they were bunks. There's two here, two here, two here. And it may have been the way that they were laid out around the floor, but I just... Yeah, or at least they're next to each other or something. Anyway, this is his handwriting. The names of persons in diagram on the 3rd of March. This is 1886. Is that the loo in the probably. I would imagine this is where the potty is. And then, oh, no, it's stove. It's a stove. Oh, okay. Where the heater is. So
you don't need a heater.
No, and it's up on the bench in Salt Lake, so you know it's cold. Now, he is going to say one other thing that I thought was interesting that I wanted to point out. And this is, and here he's actually, and he was writing it to Sister Marinda Goff, and I don't know if she was a wife or something like that. And so I just pulled out just a piece of this because I thought it was interesting. Another poem. "In private talk one evening with our seer and prophet Joseph Smith before he shared a martyr's fate. 'Twas 1843, this sacred law was as shown to me." So he's saying, I was taught about plural marriage in 1843 by Joseph Smith, "which gives to man his loving wives God's only path to endless lives." So part of why we've got to hang in there is that plural marriage is the only path to celestial glory. Now, we don't believe that now, but that's certainly what he was believing, and it could have been that even Joseph was teaching that. His understanding was that Joseph taught that we need to live polygamy because that's the only way to live in the celestial kingdom. That's one of those questions that sometimes gets asked even today about celestial marriage. Does it have to be polygamy? Is that the only way? And does everybody have to live polygamy? No, no, and no. But it's one of those questions that gets asked a lot.
Is that what it says in the 136th section?
132?
132.
I don't know if it says it's the only path, but it does say that they're justified. I don't know. Does anybody else know? Yeah, and this is why they're justified when they do
right.
it, but I don't think it says this was the only way.
Right. Interestingly enough, in the last 6 weeks, has come out with a new gospel topic essay, and they have specifically said,
nope,
that is not the requirement for exaltation, and that no one, because this is something that gives a lot of women it, heartburn.
Well, and for a lot of antis, this is one of those bones they like to pick with
it
the church.
Is, but they said, no one is going to be required to be in any relationship.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that part. Okay, all right. That's why we had a former temple president that used to say there's going to be a lot of surprised men on Judgment Day or on Resurrection Day because there are going to be wives that go, no, I'm done. I've had enough. Yeah. Yeah, I did. Well, and that's why I say this was a prevailing belief, and you can see, especially from Lorenzo Snow, this is where it's coming from, is that there was a belief in Salt Lake that's why we have to really, and Wilford Woodruff was going to struggle with this because to be cut off from this doctrine was a massive, massive jump.
And from what I read at that time, like you were going to be a bishop, you
yes.
pretty much.
Yeah, from a policy, especially after the Reformation, if you really want to be a church leader, you better be living that. Otherwise, we're going to be a little suspicious that you're not supporting the brethren. Yeah.
That sounds like kind of a political situation right there. But the
it'll come back in about 2 minutes when we change subject. Yeah, lady in back. Yeah. Yeah. Because again, if you're not living the principle, then we're a little suspicious that you're just not supportive. And that's okay. That's why wait next year, guys. Wait next year till everybody starts getting the new garments. And women start coming into sacrament meeting and they're wearing sleeveless. I know, I'm sure up there it is. But it's just going to be, so somebody's coming in and we're going to be going. In fact, I had a lady in my office just this week and she said, got him. She just wanted me to know, okay, I'm not, yeah. Yeah. How can that be? How can
totally legal.
I know.
It's totally legal.
Oh yeah. She's got the new garment, so it's fine. But we're gonna do that, right? You can see how these kind of policy things end up. How sad it is. I know, and this is a minor version of what polygamy was, but yeah.
I am trying, they're talking about them pulling the sleeves up, and I'm the one that's going like this because I'm directing music.
It's a half beat off.
It's new. Okay, so I find background is my mom's dad wrote letters back and forth between grandma and they wrote the letters because he was in Korea. So I typed those all up so they were easy to read and printed them out for them, right? So I'm reading about how they discuss church.
Yeah.
And so how much it has changed in their approach, how things done, how the going to primary presidency was almost an election, has changed from that. It makes it easy for me to see a change, to see a change, to see a change.
Because now we're used to changes.
I don't understand why we want to show more of this. I don't but you know what I'm saying? I wonder if we spent more time with this history, like my daughter maybe.
Yes. 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 Thank you. That's one of the reasons why I'm trying to do this, is that I believe that, well, I know the church is going to continue to grow and add things and change, and but if we're so locked into we can't change, and we can't, and we're so locked into you can't change your revelation, then we're going to have a hard time when the prophet says high priests or groups are going away, you know.
Be
yet vinegar. Oh. As shocking as that is, yes. I know.
And that he was older, so he had a grandfather, and he was crafting plural marriage and had a festival. He just dropped his wives. He just picked them out. He said, I don't have to do this anymore. One of the wives was his grandmother.
Wow.
And he was telling the story that his father had told him. And I'm thinking,
What kind of stuff is this?
Yes. And I'm thinking, you know, it was supposed to have been done under moral reasons.
Right. Now you start getting some idea why it is a week before they announce the change on the priesthood ban that Lorenzo Snow sees in council meeting. Who does he see in vision? Wilford Woodruff. And it just makes sense. That is the link for something this big. Yeah. Oh,
they
yeah.
Not
yeah.
And there had to be, the prophet said, you made them.
Yeah. Take care of them. Yeah. Well, we're going to probably I was trying to look even over the next few weeks, our topics, because right now we're just kind of plowing ahead and seeing what's there. And I'm thinking that one of the classes that I'd like to do maybe one on Eliza Snow. And kind of the effect of women of all of this. And we now have this as a background. It'd be nice to be able to do on some of the sisters in here. But so here's after the court decision of Edmund Tucker. When the Supreme Court has finally said, this is going to be law, and you've challenged it, and it got approved by the Supreme Court. Okay. In the fall of 1889, just ahead of this, a state president, Wilford Woodruff, could see that this was coming. A state president came to President Woodruff and asked whether he was obliged to sign a recommend for a man to enter into plural marriage, considering the law forbade the practice. Now, remember, if you were going to, technically, for plural marriage, you should have to get approval from your ecclesiastical leader. Okay? President Cannon, George Q. Cannon, who was writing this, who was in the room, was surprised to hear President Woodruff's answer. It is not proper for any marriages of this kind to be performed in this Utah territory at the present time, the year before. And President Cannon's response is going to be similar to what Marion G. Romney's was when President Kimball received the revelation on the priesthood ban. He's going to say, it was, Cannon wrote in his journal, the first time he'd ever heard a president of the church, express himself so plainly on the subject of curtailing plural marriage. I made no reply, Cannon wrote, not prepared to fully acquiesce in his expressions. I just did not know what to say that the president was actually not sanctioning it anymore. What do we do? And I'm his counselor. Okay? So that's why it's interesting. On September 23rd, 1890, President Cannon appeared as usual at the First Presidency's office in the Gardo House, right next to the just south of where the Beehive House is now. I found President Woodruff quite stirred up in his feelings. And man, this sounds like President Kimball struggling with the priesthood ban. Quite stirred up in his feelings concerning the steps taken by our enemies to malign us before the country and to make false statements concerning our teachings and action. President Woodruff found the First Presidency Secretary, George Gibbs. And by the way, George Gibbs was the test case all the way to the Supreme Court. They used George Gibbs as the... This was like Roe v. Wade. There was going to had to be a person that whose case they were arguing, and it was George Gibbs, the First Presidency State Secretary. And the two walked into the room adjacent to the First Presidency's office, where the church president dictated his thoughts while Gibbs took them down. When President Woodruff emerged from the room, his face shone with pleasure and seemed very much pleased and contented. He asked to have the dictation read to President Cannon, which was done. While it was not exactly the proper shape to publish, Cannon said it contained the ideas and it was very good. I told him it would do good. So now, by this point, now a year later here, he's kind of on board now with this. So here's kind of the summation of this then. And this you could read in Pearl of Great Price or Doctrine and Covenants. Press dispatches have been sent for political purposes from Salt Lake to the effect that the Utah Commission, in their recent report to the Secretary of the Interior, alleged that plural marriages are still being solemnized and that 40 or so have been contracted in Utah since last June and encouraged. He's going to say, no, therefore, as President of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, do hereby in the most solemn manner declare that these charges are false. We are not teaching polygamy or plural marriage, nor permitting any person to enter into its practice, and I deny that either 40 or any other number of plural marriages have been in that period solemnized in our temple or any other place in the territory, like the Endowment House, which he then tore down. That was right on State Street.
Because it was worth more than
Yeah, so that's got to go. Plus, we now have three temples. We have temples you can go to. You don't need the Endowment House. Inasmuch as laws have been enacted by Congress forbidding plural marriages, which laws have been pronounced constitutional by the court of last resort, I hereby declare my intention to submit to these laws and use my influence with the members of the church over which I preside to have them do likewise. Okay, that's what gets us finally to the manifesto. So I've got some other
things.
Yeah, it's President Woodruff.
And how many wives did he
have? I don't know. That's a good question. More than one.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is probably a good place to stop. It may be. I've got some more stuff here. No, just one more. Okay. What we'll do is. We got five. Hold on. Yeah, that's gonna be our next class, because this kind of thing is a hard thing to stamp down. It will result in two excommunications of apostles, and it will really build up life in Mexico and Canada, and result in a second manifesto under Joseph F. Smith. But he's gonna just try and say, and he will say this in Cache County, in Logan. I know there are a good many men and some leading men in this church who have been tried and felt as though President Woodruff had lost the spirit, was about to apostatize. We can't handle a new revelation on top of the old one the way that we believe now for all these years. Okay? I want you to understand that he's second, third person, right? I want you to understand he has not lost the spirit, nor he's not going to apostatize. The Lord is with him, with his people. He has told me exactly what to do and what the result would be if I didn't do it. I've been called upon by friends outside the church, asked to take steps. They knew the course the government was determined to take. This feeling has manifested, has been manifested more or less by members of the church. I saw exactly what would happen. We're going to lose our temples. I've had this spirit with me for a long time, but I want to say this. I should have let all the temples go out of our hand. That was the deal. If there is a line to cross, we can't lose our temples. Even if we're going to change the doctrine, we're going to change about plural marriage being essential, and he's also going to change the doctrine about being adopted to church leaders that we talked about last week. I should have gone to prison myself and let every other man go there had not the God of heaven commanded me to do what I did do. And when the hour came, I was commanded to do that. It was all clear to me. I went before the Lord, and he wrote what the Lord told me.
There's a manifesto. I always thought the manifesto was purely administrative.
No, he's... No, he's going to make... He says, I'm going to have... That's why he's phrasing it. They may not have said it in conference, but he's going to reiterate it in Logan because he needs you to know, I got a revelation. This is what the Lord told me to do. Okay? So anyway, great stuff. Interesting stuff, right? And it's a, let's come back to what we just said. And I think it's important to know the history, how the church changes, and it may change a prior revelation or the way that we believe that things needed to be. It may change that. And can we be okay with that in moving forward? Okay? I know, that's probably coming. But, all right, final comments on this before we call it good and go hit the rain? Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's why in some ways when the suffrage movement comes, they're actually trying to say monogamous marriage wasn't that much better than a polygamous marriage because you had about the same amount of rights as a polygamous woman did. And they would use some of that argument, especially the LDS suffragettes, them ladies who then run for office and did a lot of great work. Well, I'm holding on to my favorite quote from the Smoot hearing, and it's going to go down that road. So anyway, bury my testimony that the church is led by revelation, and when revelations come, it may change what we think. And as long as we are in that mindset, we're not surprised. We can continue to follow a prophet, even as we grow and expand our knowledge. And I leave that with you in Jesus' name. Amen. Can I get a closing prayer? Johnny, you want to? Okay, thanks.
And thank you for joining us for another Monday morning class. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions about future topics that we could discuss, or if you had any questions concerning something that you heard in the class, please drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. As always, if you happen to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, please come in and join us on a Monday morning. We'd love to see you and identify who you are. If the podcast itself is resonating with you, go ahead and click subscribe so that Apple can figure out where we are. We'd love to hear from you. So again, thank you for coming, and we'll see you for another Monday morning class.